You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of May 5th, 2021. Scott said, get over here, so we're back.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points Podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Alboy.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. We're back.
We're back. Yep. new and expanded family of podcasters.
Yeah, exactly. Finally, there will be people to take on the mantle when we inevitably keel over and die while recording.
Yes, my bloodline will continue.
For 400 years.
For 400 years.
Our children will awaken.
Only a single child, though. Like, it not branching out. Every single child for the next 400 years will have exactly only one child.
We're back. George is extremely sleep-deprived, so he's finally playing on my level.
Yes. Only the hottest scoops now from the both of us.
Yeah, the filter is gone. All dad jokes all the time. We'll probably talk about some of that stuff in the future here, but to just ease back into our little podcast paternity leave, we're going to talk about a movie that just came out. Gosh,
yep,
I don't know.
We're film critics now.
Couple weeks ago or something like that. I forget when they released it, but it's a little movie by the name of Mortal Kombat.
Ooh, there have been other Mortal Kombat movies. I'm pretty sure all of them called Mortal Kombat, just Mortal Kombat, right?
At a certain point they started subtitling them like Mortal Kombat Annihilation and Mortal Kombat something or other. I forget what they were calling it. Like the 95 one was definitely just Mortal Kombat with a K. Sweet. If you're looking it up.
There's a joke in this Mortal Kombat where someone says they didn't even spell it right. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
So we're gonna talk about the movie. We're gonna talk about how it interacts with the series a little bit. Yep. And we should probably just say off the jump there's going to be spoilers for the 2021 release Mortal Kombat.
Yes. What little plot there is, we will spoil it. I wouldn't worry too much about it. I'm going to be honest. If you want to watch the film, it's currently streaming on HBO Max.
Yeah, until I forget when. HBO is doing their, you know, their plague special of like, yeah, you can watch it streaming and then you have to venture out into the wasteland to go to a movie theater. So going into this, how much knowledge did you have?
Very little. I'm familiar with all of the characters of Mortal Kombat for the most part. However, the Mortal Kombat series as like a extended narrative gets pretty fucking convoluted extremely fast.
Oh, yeah.
Right? There's weird time travel. People are like brothers. There's multiple personas of people. Like multiple people have been Sub-Zero within the fiction of Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
The basic premise of this like outer world, the champions that got to duke it out.
Yep.
All of that stuff I understand at a very shallow level. I will say that I think this film does a pretty good job of making that lore approachable because it kind of just skips a lot of shit. There's literally one scene where the main character is talking to Sonya Blade and she's just like, here's all this exposition that you need in 5 seconds, but don't worry about it. Like, we gotta go. And then that's all you need. That's all you need. And I'm perfectly happy with that. So, limited understanding. I don't think I needed a ton, though.
Right. I was talking to Hannah about this, and I was thinking about the Mortal Kombat lore just generally, and it's pretty rare that you have a video game that has such an unbroken body of lore without a bunch of weird reboots, soft reboots, blah, 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 because like they basically have been following the same. If you play the latest Mortal Kombat, it is an extension of what they kicked off in 93 or whenever that first game came out.
How are people still alive? Like, aren't they? Are they not actually dying? I guess.
I mean, I didn't play MK11, but my understanding was they lean heavily on alternate universes and time travel.
That, yeah, at some points, everything becomes about that because you run out of stories and you just got to go back in time. Restarted.
And they also lean into some of the, not just the alternate timelines, but the next generation, you know, Sonya and Johnny Cage's kids, like the combat kids, like all of those people that they introduce somewhere around like MK9 or 10 or something.
Right, yeah.
So there's multiple generations of Mortal Kombat, is what I'm saying. Yeah,
Sonya Blades' grandkids.
Yeah. MK babies.
Yeah, MK babies.
So I, similar to you, I don't even know if I saw a trailer of this movie. I mean, maybe I saw a trailer of it, but it was, I knew almost nothing going into it. I didn't even really know the what point in the lore they were going to jump in. Like, was this going to be like an early Mortal Kombat, or was this going to be the kind of post? Post Netherrealm type of thing that they're currently in with the weird what's her name? Kronika. That's the villain.
Oh,
like
really?
She's the one that like controls. She's like the time god or something.
That makes sense with the name Kronika.
Yeah,
she's was also that or like she runs a dispensary or something. So they've gone the basically the cinematic universe way, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The Marvel Cinematic Universe. They've established a new universe. One of the things that I like about this film is that the premise, right, of there's a Mortal Kombat event that happens, there are these two worlds that are fighting. It's almost as though this film takes place, I don't know, the second or third film in a series and just skips the founding mythos. Like there is no foundational introduction of what all of this stuff is. By the time we are in the lore of the film, everyone except for our main character knows what's going on. And we have the surrogate in the Cole Young character, who's brand new, does not exist in the Mortal Kombat video game series yet, I suppose. I assume he will. Everyone already sort of knows what's going on. I think that's great, because the reality is most people watching this film willingly probably also already know what's going on and don't need all that crap.
I will rip the Band-Aid here because we're dancing around it a little bit, but like, I think this movie is not bad.
I totally agree. I think this movie is actually pretty fun. I had a really good time with it.
And I'm not gonna stand here and say this is a good movie, but I'm gonna say like, this is a not bad movie.
This feels like a movie. You know, we've talked in the past before about like adapting video games and. There's this constant balance between wanting to be fan service, right? And like wanting to actually like tell a story as it is, or like do your own thing with it. This feels like a film that is aware that it wants to be fan service and says, okay, well, we're gonna give you fan service because we know what our limitations are, right? Like we're not gonna try to tell a whole new world. Or we're not gonna try to tell like the story of Mortal Kombat from the beginning to be canonically what you expect, right?
Yeah.
We're going to deliver fan service in the sense that we're going to show you some of the fatalities and some of the iconic moves that you recognize from the video games.
Yep.
There might be some deep cut characters that we drop in. But what we're really here for is we're going to use the universe of Mortal Kombat to have a kind of a fun, schlocky action movie, because that's what we're good at. That's what we want to put together.
Yep.
And I think it accomplishes that with flying colors. I mean, for the most part, the action is pretty serviceable. Like a lot of the combat is pretty fun, and I think a lot of the abilities that are callbacks to the video games, they use in really kind of fun, clever ways. I will admit to being the kind of douchey guy on the couch every now and then, looking at Nicole being like, that's a move from the video game, I delighted in doing that, not because I'm like checking off a list, but because I'm kind of surprised that they went there and that it worked, right?
Yeah. This is jumping around a little bit, but especially when they introduced Cabal, he's the guy with like the two kind of weird axe swords things. So it's like his moves were like extremely similar to the video games. Like even like the whole like warping in from the side of the frame and stuff like that. Like that stuff was very, and it also just got.
I mean, everyone like Melina as well.
That's true.
Sub-Zero for sure. The last fight with Sub-Zero where he makes a clone version of himself.
Yeah.
Or he makes the ice wall and then kicks Scorpion through that. Like, that is so, that was so satisfying. And not just because it was a callback, but it was cool within that moment, right? Like, yeah. I didn't expect that to happen. It was Scorpion got in the way that I have gotten got by that move in a video game, you know?
Well, that's the funny thing where it made me think about how it made me think about, like, weirdly, the video games themselves kind of got cinematic before the movies got cinematic, you know, especially basically anything from MK9 onward, where you were watching like 10 minutes of cutscene and then it flows directly into a fight without a load, you know, that it was kind of doing that cinematic stuff beforehand, and the graphics had caught up to the movie in such a way that it was pretty seamless. So now, in a weird way, the movie is trying to catch up to where the games are, you know?
Yes, 100%. I think that, so there's a scene pretty early on, and I think this encapsulates that the most, where Sub-Zero and Jax are fighting, and Sub-Zero freezes Jax's arms.
Right.
And then shatters them.
Yeah.
And there's a scene, like an extent, I mean, by the way, this film is exceedingly graphic and violent. And in that scene, you see like pieces of bone like sticking out of Jax's arm.
Yeah.
And my first thought were to the outlandish modern Netherrealm fatality sort of cutscene. Not even fatality. What do they call them in the game now? Where they're sort of like
mini it's everything. Fatality? It's the like the X-ray, the brutalities and stuff. Like all that stuff.
Like where they'll show like the crunching bones and stuff.
Yeah.
That seemed to me like the deepest one-to-one, like that was almost exactly what you would see in a video game in terms of sort of graphic rendering, the extended lingering of the camera like on the angle to show that damage and violence, even the way that they're freezing the arms and they're doing all of these like little mini jump cuts to show it, like you know what's coming, right? That's kind of the gratification of that form of violence in the video game, right? You initiate an action, you go through all of these punches, and you know it's going to culminate in this thing, this sort of finisher move, the crescendo of that single action set piece,
right?
And it happens in the film in a way that I think you're exactly right. It's been happening in the game for years now.
Yeah, I think the thing that they did the best was to basically explore the implications of someone that has a power like Sub-Zero has.
Yes,
where. That was one thing you can't really do in the game where you're just fighting, where it's like you don't really understand the, like, oh man, Sub-Zero's powers are pretty fucked up. Like there's like a time when he, like, you know, he can just freeze people, or he could like freeze someone's blood and stab them with it, you know, like there's
when he made the blood knife, so cool. I love that.
And so I think they did some good work around here is what Sub-Zero could do kind of just as a villain all the time. Versus just a like 2 minute fight match that is what you normally see from Mortal Kombat. So I thought that stuff was pretty neat, actually.
Side note, I was reading an article that was saying the man who plays Bi-Han / Sub-Zero / I guess Noob Saibot or Shadow or whatever in future movies, he signed on to be in 4 Mortal Kombat films.
Holy crap.
More will come.
I going back to the very beginning, something you said about the pacing. So I think, like most movies, I think this movie kind of falls apart a little bit towards the last third of it. But the beginning, I was very surprised. I was like, man, this movie's moving. Like, I mean, it's quick. Like they're dumping you right into the plot. It's not super, like you said, they're not spending like 20 minutes on just the background lore or whatever. It's like,
well, like, so like, for example, why, you know, so in the beginning of the film, Bi-Han, Sub-Zero's character, is trying to kill Scorpion's bloodline. Yeah. Why? They never bother explaining why. Doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, but they eventually get around to it in the way of like, oh, he's going to continue to like pass along, you know, the mark to all of his progeny, and every tournament that, you know, what's his face? Not Shao Kahn. Who's the big bad in this one? Shang Tsung. Yes. Shang Tsung has basically been cheating every tournament up until this one to try to get, you know, outworld into the Earth realm or whatever.
Yep.
So it's like, okay, so this is like a Terminator thing where it's like, I'm going to go to the beginning and try to and try to take out this guy so that he can never have any kids so that we can finally take over Earth at some point, you know, in the future tournament. But it's like, they don't even need to talk about that. Like they, and they don't really until they reveal through other characters, oh shit, it's the birthmarks, it's the tattoos, you know, like, but they could have easily spent like 10 minutes just exposition dumping that, but like they don't need to, they just jump right into it, you know?
I also think it's really smart that they wasted, not wasted, they wisely spent every single actor budget dollar to get Hideyuki Sanada to play Scorpion, who's awesome. He's so good in that role. He's a great actor. He's so good in that role. Everyone else is total trash. Well, except with one exception, which we'll talk about later. Everyone is bad. But I think that actor's genuinely good.
Yeah.
And as the character to bookend the film, because Scorpion is in the beginning and then he sort of comes back truly as Scorpion.
Right.
With the whole, like the mask reveal and everything is awesome. Yeah. And he's great. And his action scenes are great. And I think that first fight scene and the last fight scene are the two best fight scenes in the film.
Yeah.
And I think it's because they know that they have a great actor in this role who can carry the sort of the way that the characters banter in between one another, right? The high drama of Sub-Zero versus Scorpion shit-talking one another.
I mean, that works this because is they have a good actor. Well, yeah, that's what I mean. This is going to sound preposterous, but their fights are a metaphor for the hatred that they have between them. And it's like, okay, cool. Well, like you have two actors that you actually believe the hatred between them because they're pretty good actors. And it's like, great. Now the metaphor is justifying the insanity that we are seeing in the fight scene, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas like your point, the other ones, like the actors, whatever, like it's just a bunch of, you know, idiot meatbags fighting each other.
There's just some weird choices. Like, and again, I guess it's really, maybe this isn't a weird choice, but this is, again, another testament to what I think a lot of other films would have done, right? Mm-hmm. So Cole Young, who is really the audience surrogate in the main character, who's new to all of this Mortal Kombat stuff, he has a wife and a child that are sort of his motivating, you know, the characters that motivate him to participate and, you know, unlock his fucking chi or whatever when he's fighting Goro. But early on, their lives are threatened, and he literally just drops them off at home. And then, like, goes to, like, you know, Mortal Kombat summer camp.
Yeah.
For
Mortal Kombat University.
For, like, a straight hour before ever checking in on his family. A lot of worse films that think they're doing better would spend way more time with his family to write, to try to build the emotional drama, right?
Yeah.
And this film doesn't really bother doing that at all.
Yeah.
But I think that's a good decision. Like, we don't really know anything other than He cares for his family. Fine. We all care for our family.
Exactly. You know?
But that's not really what we're doing here.
You don't need to justify it where it's just like, look, and there's not, the interesting thing is there's not a lot of drama in the family too. Like it's not a metaphor for like, we're about to get divorced and now I have to fight in this tournament. Yes. You know, it's like, it's
like, just, I'm a bad dad. I got to prove myself. Like,
right. It's like, oh, this guy seems to have a pretty, I mean, you can tell his wife isn't crazy about him doing the fights for pay, but like they seem to be pretty fine with it. The daughter seems to be pretty fine with it. They seem to be a pretty functional family. And it's like, huh, weird. I guess the conflict of this movie is not a like weird J.J. Abrams family metaphor. It's actually just there's Outworld trying to invade Earth.
I mean, again, like it sounds, you have to throw out so much of what you think makes good film.
Right.
You know, and because of that, I think you're right. This is not a good film. But look, it knows its limitations, and it meets that. You know what I mean? It's great. Can we talk for a second, by the way, because you mentioned the birthmarks. Mm. There's a scene where they're talking about these birthmarks, and the daughter's like, oh, it's a birthmark, and he shows the birthmark. It's a fucking photorealistic drawing of a dragon. Who in their right mind looks at a birthmark that is, like, that accurate? Like, I understand if it's, like, you know, it kind of looks like a dragon. You know, the way that a cloud might look like a dog or whatever, right? You do not look at that person's quote-unquote birthmark and think, this is just a natural, weird skin condition, you know? If a doctor saw that, they would call
like
a tabloid magazine. Like, that's insane.
Well, it's also weird that he just meets Jax for the first time, and his daughter is like, show him the birthmark, Dad, and he does it.
Yeah, he does it.
To a complete stranger.
Birthmark. I mean, he's probably used to it because it's fucking amazing.
Like, I guess that's true. It's like, look at this cool thing. Yeah.
It's very, very strange. There's also a scene, I mean, now we're jumping way ahead, but I just wanted to like call out some weird things that I thought were hilarious. At the end of the film, Raiden is like, all right, now we survived. It's time to like find all of the other people with marks. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, allude to like Johnny Cage being in LA.
Right.
Why are they, why is Outworld not sending assassins to kill those other people?
Yeah, I mean, they should just be like Terminatoring all over the world, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's very strange that like you could, I guess at some point you can tell that they don't want to, they don't want to waste all of their juice, right?
Yeah.
So they start sprinkling in these characters that I think a lot of people aren't familiar with, right? Right. Like Melina, sure, but there's like Natara. Like the,
is that the flying lady?
Vampire lady with wings? Mm-hmm. You know, like some deep cut Mortal Kombat characters, because we know, well, we're not, we don't want to get everybody that you know, you know, into this.
Right. Well, and those, and when they go to
future movies.
Well, they have a huge roster, right? And they even, they allude to them. Like, if you look at when they, when they're walking through Raiden's temple and they're going through kind of like the, you know, the tableaus of the history of the Mortal Kombat, like, you see a lot of the other characters in it.
Yes.
You know, they, from other cultures and stuff, too. Like, you could see, who's the Native American? Is it Nightwolf, I think? Like, you can see him. Yeah.
Well, there's, like, a drawing of him. They were like, oh, multiple cultures had this. And yes. There's a picture of him in Sonya Blade's sort of, like,
oh, that's what, yes, you're right. Yeah, that's what it was. Or, like, there's, like, you see a kind of a drawing or a sketch of, like, Baraka, like, the guy with the weird, like, blades that shoot out of his arm and stuff. Like, there's a lot of, like, other, like, wink, wink, we're going to make more of these, everyone. Like that sort of thing for it.
How did you like the fact that even the mechanical, so for example, Kano, in the video game series, shoots a laser out of his eyeball, but he has like a cybernetic thing on his head, right?
Yeah.
Or Jax has like bionic arms, right? Yep. In the film, those mechanical things are sourced from their, what do they call it? Arcana or Kana or something?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, how did you think that that made, like, did you like that they basically did away with some of the sort of cyborg side of things?
It's weird because for Jax specifically, where it's like, again, like, this is, the movie is, it strikes a weird tone where I think in some ways the original Mortal Kombat, the 1995 movie, in a weird way was a bit truer to the game in its campiness. But this one was still true in terms of like the spirit and like the lore of the character or whatever. But like the minute you see him on screen and the minute you see him with real arms, you're like, uh-oh. Like,
yeah, yeah, exactly.
Something's like, going to happen to those. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's weird to me that so he lost his arms and then Raiden's team gave him mechanical arms and then his like, arcana was to get better mechanical arms.
Well, to be fair, they give him like, his mechanical arms are Ricky not even as good as like Luke Skywalker's arms.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and you're right. The other thing, like the laser thing, like I forget what Kano's backstory is, like how he became a cyborg or whatever, but it is just like, and I think this is where the movie is smart, where it's just like, fuck it. We're not even going to justify this. Like this guy has lasers now.
Yeah.
The end.
Yeah.
Deal with it. You know, it's like, and it's like, fine. If that's how you're going to play it, then I would rather you not explain it whatsoever than have a ridiculous explanation, you know?
Exactly. I mean, when Sonya Blade gets her sort of magical purple orb abilities too, like it's another scenario where we don't even know what that is. Like she doesn't name it. She doesn't call it anything. We don't know if it's like some weird sound blast. It punched a hole through Melina's chest. But that's all we know. Like that's all we know. And Sonya Blade, she doesn't practice. She just is like, I'm here, boom, done.
Fireballs.
You know, move on. That's fine. It's totally fine. Totally fine. Since we're talking about Kano, Josh Lawson, the guy who plays Kano, probably my favorite character in the film. He leans
He's the
into,
closest to the campiness that I was kind of looking for, you know?
Like the, but I think that he approaches it with a sense of... like he knows that he's playing a role that should be hated. Like he's a kind of scumbaggy, like Australian hotshot.
Yep.
And he embraces it. And I think that his comedic time is genuinely good. Like I really had fun with him in pretty much every scene. You know, he's like racist towards Kung Lao.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He says all kinds of like terrible shit to Sonya Blade. But I think as a character, he's actually really funny. And most, I think, of the film's humor comes from Kano.
Yeah.
It's almost a bummer he dies at the end.
Well, because I think that he'll be back. You know, because Shang Tsung will bring. The moment him back.
Everyone sort of like becomes Shadow. I'm like, okay, right. Well, they're probably going to be back. But I think that that character was a lot of fun, and I think really helped sort of keep me paying attention while they were working through some of the, you know, the sort of what would otherwise be a montage. You know, at Raiden's temple.
Right. Well, and also he, in a weird way, Kano is also a stand-in for the audience to not be afraid to name things as ridiculous.
Yes.
Because, like, he's always like, oi, what the fuck? Like, dragons, yes. You know, like, and the audience is saying the same thing. Or, like, when he has lasers, he's like, fucking lasers. And it's,
yeah,
like,
I did it. Yeah, I knew it would be lasers. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, he's great.
And so it's like he is just the other side of the coin of Cole, of like the avatar for the audience, yes, you know? So it's like, great, fine. You know, like this is, that's what we needed, you know, to not take it too, too seriously.
Well, the scene when he's fighting Reptile, he punches Reptile's heart out, holds it up in that prolonged scene, and then says, Kano wins.
Yeah.
Like he says, Kano wins. And it works. Like, it's not cheesy, right? It's not cringe inducing. It's the right level of cheesy.
It's the, you know, it's like, hey, he did the thing from the thing. That's what Kano's fatality was. And, like, you know, great, you know, fan service.
Right. But it feels as though Kane, like, the character Kano is being ridiculous. Like, he knows he's being ridiculous. He knows he's being campy and cheesy because he thinks it's funny.
Yeah. Yes. You know,
and because he's in on it, he's in on that joke, and he's in on a lot of the humor whenever he's delivering those humorous lines, it totally works, you know? Yeah. And there's a lot of one-off lines that are references like that. I think at one point, for example, not Kung Lao, who's the other one? Is it Kung Lao? The guy with the hat?
That's Kung Lao. Liu Kang is the bandana guy.
Kung Lao says flawless victory.
Yeah.
When he kills Natara.
That was way more cringy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right, because Kung Lao, like, he's a little bit funny in the movie. Like, he's definitely more of his character than, say, Liu Kang.
Yeah.
But I don't think it works in the way that Kano's, like, one-liners work.
No.
And then there's another line, I think it's in the end of the film, when Scorpion and Sub-Zero are fighting.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you hear the words fatality. I don't know who says it. It might just be like a narrator saying it. Like, it's just a voice from the blue.
It was, I believe it was Scorpion saying, like,
why would he say those words?
Because I think he said something like fatality for, no, it's Liu Kang. He said fatality because Liu Kang was avenging his brother's or his cousin's death or whatever. Remember it was, I forget who it was, but that's when he, that's when he did his fatality of, like, the fiery dragon or whatever.
Yes.
And he said, fatality to avenge Kung Lao or something like that.
Okay, so it's, like, in the context of, like, a sentence. He's using it in a sentence. It still
didn't make any sense. like that. Yeah. That is, like, again, to your point, like, the Kano thing works way better than those do because they feel more forced, you know?
Yes, they feel more like drops. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think every single character that works, like, I think Sub-Zero works, I think Scorpion works, Kano works, even Sonya Blade works a little bit because she's
I was fine with that. And they're not super condescending to her from a movie perspective. Like, you know, they're kind of shitty to her just because, you know, she hasn't been chosen, but then she actually does take someone out of her own. I don't know. She just has a fair amount of, like, independence in the movie. That's not just like, hey, I'm the toss in, you know, other person,
female,
you know?
Character.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, for sure.
I made a list that we can go through. But also we can talk about it as part of the list. Never mind. Okay. So before before we watched it, I made a list of 10 things that I thought would be in the movie or that I hoped would be in the movie.
You had not watched any trailers. Nothing.
No. Yeah, this is just blind. I was like, okay, here are things that are references or whatever that are going to happen. And so I was trying to predict. So we'll go through that real quick. Okay, number one with a bullet, orchestral or somber version of the MK techno song from the 95 movie. I was sweating this though, because I was kind of sweating, but they busted it out towards like the last third of the movie, but then they used it a lot.
Yes, they used it a lot, and then the ending credits are to the techno song also.
Yeah, and the end credits are the, like, dubstep version of it.
Yes, yep, totally, yeah. So good.
Okay, my other prediction, Scorpion says, get over here, which they then combined with the MK song Stinger during that scene. Okay, riddle me this, George. This man is from 1600s Japan.
Yeah, like the way that he speaks Japanese isn't even like modern Japanese.
No.
Yeah? He's basically speaking, he should be speaking old English. If he says it in English at all, it should be like, get thy over upon yonder, you know?
So he pops into the Cole is on the ropes from Sub-Zero. He pops in, he shoots the his dagger into Sub-Zero and yells, get over here, and then reels him in. This man has spoken nothing but Japanese until this point in the movie.
Yes, yeah. Okay, well,
And then in the next scene, he speaks Japanese to Cole.
Well, here's my thinking. Canonically, right, Scorpion has been in hell.
Yes.
I assume he's learned speak English in hell.
Yeah.
I mean, right? He's picked it up here and there.
I also don't... I guess I need to check the credits, but... Traditionally, Ed Boon has been the voice of Scorpion, and I don't think they used him for that. It would have been sweet if they used Ed Boon for just that line in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That would have been wise, too, because I'm sure they paid by the word for Sonata.
Right.
Is Get Over Here, like, that has to be one of the most iconic video game phrases of all time. Like, besides, like, Wahoo or It's-a-Me Mario.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty far up there. I mean, it's also, like, it's now... almost, 30 years or something of that catchphrase. So
I mean, we all know it's coming, but I was still hyped to see it, you know? I don't know. So I feel so weird because so often I shit talk people that are just, like, that we're just in it for fan service, right? I'm really not someone that thinks just give people what they want and shut up. I watch a lot of movies, right? And I like movies. I think about movies. I talk about movies. I listen to podcasts about movies. I thought it worked. I thought it totally worked when he says, get over here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's a payoff. And then they put in the, like, you know, slowed down, remixed, you know, dun, 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 yes. dun. And it's sweet. Okay, this one, I guess maybe I can take a mulligan on this one. Johnny Cage punches someone in the nuts. That has to be happening in the next movie because Johnny someone Cage wasn't in this movie.
Kicked in the nuts, though. Kano gets kicked in the nut by Sonya Blade.
Yeah.
So I feel like you're halfway there.
Yeah, but I mean, when they intro Johnny Cage, you know, guaranteed he'll do the leg splits to punch someone in the nuts.
100%. We don't have casting for that, right?
Correct? I don't know. Yeah, I didn't read anything yet, but like I would imagine, I don't know. It's in a weird way, and I don't mean this in a fucked up way, but like this movie didn't feel super expensive, so I'm hoping that it does all right, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, some of the CG is a little rough, you know?
Oh, yeah, but I mean, you know, that's in the long tradition of rough Mortal Kombat movie CG scenarios. Yeah, yeah. I don't know if Shang Tsung said it, but someone definitely said, test your might. It might have been Raiden or somebody in the training montage.
Yeah, I do remember hearing that as well. But
my fifth prediction, there's a sexy Lady Goro. Just... a crime that there wasn't, but they didn't even reference anything like that.
I think it'll come. There was a huge Goro statue in Outland.
Yeah.
So I assume that there's like other people of the species. I think a sexy Lady Goro, not unlikely, because I would love to see a fight scene with two Goros.
Right.
Yeah.
I have a website for you?
Yes.
This one was. This one was kind of a shot in the dark, but it did not come true. My sixth prediction was there's a scene where a kid is playing a fake video game, and then he sees a crazy portal open up out of his window that looks like what's happening in his game.
That's a hilariously specific prediction. I really like that quite a bit.
But like, can you just imagine like a little kid is like, you know, playing something that looks like Mortal Kombat, or maybe even, hell, Mortal Kombat 1 or something, and then like, you know, Jax bursts through his wall and is like, sorry, kid. And the kid's just like, oh, sick. You know?
Yeah, it's almost funny it didn't happen. It's kind of funny because Cole Young's kids, they basically live in a cabin in the woods.
Right.
You know, which is weird because he's in L.A., I assume.
I thought that was them running. Hiding or something. Out? Yeah, I thought that was at their
uncle's cabin.
I forget what it was.
Cabin in Tahoe? Is that an Airbnb? It's Airbnb. That Gora's fucking up?
Great reviews. Great to hide from the Outlanders.
Outworlders.
They found them is the problem, you know?
That's true.
Goro had stayed there the week before, so.
Yeah, they're not getting their security deposit back after Goro definitely destroyed not that shed. Let's see. Okay. Post-credit sequence with Noob Saibot or just general robot ninjas. Not a lot of robot ninjas, but there was a lot of weird smoke that reclaimed the enemies at the end of the game. Yes. So I feel like.
And when Sub-Zero, his like outfit got knocked off, mm-hmm. you know, like I think there's a lot there of like Bi-Han being, yes. you know, yeah. so.
The cyber ninjas, all of this. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Something's going to happen there for sure. Yeah. Oh, man. Okay, number 8 really pissed me off. So someone gets punched off a bridge into a spike pit. Jax and Hammer Guy were there. Close.
Yeah, they were there. It is, honestly, worst part of the film. Worst part of the film. Like, in a movie where they literally have someone saying the words fatality, to not give us a scene where you just punch that dude off the wall. I mean, they give us Jax's fatality,
yep.
which is cool and disgusting. Right?
Yep.
But, man... You're inches away, literally yeah. inches away from just kicking that dude into a spike pit.
It's so crazy that they must have edited it out. Cause like, why would you even have that scene and that location if not to punch that guy off that bridge?
So here's my theory about this. Okay. So I was listening to the Slash Filmcast, which is another film podcast, and they reviewed Mortal Kombat, and they had Danish Syed on the podcast who worked with NetherRealm for many years. And he said, this is, again, like, you know, several steps removed.
Right.
He said that, that you know, they had worked really closely with NetherRealm on this film, and they showed them a lot of early footage. And NetherRealm, they really leaned into the violence and the over-the-top violence of the Mortal Kombat series. Right. But they were scenes that were so violent from the film that executives at NetherRealm said, you've gone too far. You have to remove this. I think this is one of those scenes because I literally do not think that you put a bridge that iconic and not have someone fall. So my theory is Jax would have kicked him off and he would have had a spike go through the testicles or something.
Right, right. And they were like,
you know, no, and there's like a dick on the spike or something like terrible. And then they're like, this is way too much. Just slap his head, into goo instead.
Which is funny because that is a fatality from the games, and then, but even then, to the last second, I was like, okay, now he's gonna punch the corpse off the bridge. I know this is happening, and then they cut, and I was like, no,
yeah. I think you're right. I think it was removed.
Number 9, time travel reference. I don't really think they did that. They just had like the history of Mortal Kombat, you know. But we'll see if they realize those 4 movies that you referenced, then time travel will have to become a thing.
For sure.
You don't get through 4 movies without time travel. Someone whispers, finish him, in a quiet, dramatic way. And that 100% happened when like Shang Tsung was talking to Melina about getting rid of all the, you know, contestants or whatever.
I expected this line, though, to come from Scorpion or Cole Young.
Yes.
When Sub-Zero was there. Because there's a moment where Sub-Zero was sort of like wobbling, you know, like standing up, but like he's clearly lost.
Yeah,
I would have thought that they would have said finish him in that scene, but it did not come.
Well, I mean, Scorpion can only say one phrase every 400 years in English, and he burned it on get over
that would
here.
Have been, I mean, that would have made perfect sense to say in English because he's speaking to Cole Young, his ancestor, who has forgotten the ancient language of Japanese.
Which is crazy because in that fight scene, he speaks Japanese to Cole, and it's like, does Cole understand Japanese? Like, what's going on here?
How badass would it be, though, to, like, fight with your fucking great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather?
And realize that he is now, like, a demon from hell that can, you know, roast people alive with his skull power.
It's a little bit dramatic, though, to have, like, some guy... This guy crawled his way out of hell, and one of his last words to you were, like, continue the bloodline. That's a lot of pressure, my dude.
Yeah. Well, and if I'm the daughter, I'm like, oof, geez, no pressure, Gramps. Like,
well, and Cole Young is a single dad. Like, he's one child. Like, you got to stop having only one Ruye, whatever their name is, right? Like, you got to expand the line, you know? Doesn't Jefferson have, like, 1,000 kids or whatever today? Like, but get to work.
Yeah, he needs to create his own army against the forces of Shang Tsung or whatever.
I mean, you would win if you had 15 kids and they had kids and all of them had marks and shit, you know? Speaking of which, does his daughter have a mark? In future movies, if time travel comes back, will she grow up pretty quickly and also become a fighter? Does she have a birthmark?
I don't know. I don't think so. They never mention it. So either she'll have to kill another contestant to get it, or maybe they just haven't revealed it yet, you know?
Maybe it's kind of like the Slayer from the Buffyverse, where like only one person in your family line has the mark.
Right.
And when Cole Young dies, some of his descendants will get it. Like one descendant will get it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I need to look this up, but I'm pretty sure Cole's, when his power comes online, that is actually an alternate weapon loadout of Scorpion for the later games.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Like the two little kind of blade bats that he has. I'm pretty sure that's like one of the alternate weapons in like MK10 or something like that.
I thought his costume was kind of weak, honestly. I really expected... So when he gets punched, his like armor starts to like light up. I thought it was going to be a Black Panther...
Same. Yeah.
...outfit, you know, where like he can absorbing it. And in my mind, I'm like, oh, they're going to put Cole Young in the game.
Yeah.
The more hits you take, you can build up his like fucking hit meter or whatever.
Yeah.
That's what I expected. Never happened. Kind of disappointed. Well,
and they seed that in the very beginning of the movie where it's like, hey, it's Cole, the human punching bag. And it's like, oh, that's his power. He can take punishment and then like deal it back out. But like they never really do anything with it.
Yeah, you know? They never shoot. Maybe they tried and the CG was just not working. I don't
right.
know.
I think there's, let's see if there's any other random notes here. I thought the, there was a scene when they were all training and I think it was Liu Kang just kept on doing the like down kick leg sweep move against Kano, which I thought was very funny because like that was like straight out of the game.
So good. And Kano comments on it and it's really funny. It totally works.
He said, yeah, he makes some line of like, is that the only move you know or whatever? And it's like, how many people in the world have said that when fucking fighting their annoying little cousin who only does that one move?
And then he like fakes him out and then does the leg sweep again.
Right.
Very good. Very good.
And then I guess the last thing that I'll say about it is that they have that huge climactic fight with Sub-Zero and Scorpion, and then the movie just kind of ends.
Yeah, it's so interesting.
Very abrupt, you know.
This film is both because they skip the foundational lore, right?
Mm-hmm.
This movie is both like a sequel to a film that doesn't exist, and a prequel to a film that doesn't exist,
right?
Because the Mortal Kombat that they speak of does not happen
exactly. In Mortal they don't Kombat. Do the tournament.
Yeah, they've never go to the tournament, so.
Which I guess justifies having three more movies, you know.
I mean, in a way, I mean, maybe that's been the holdup, right? That's what's held back this as a film franchise, is this need for a tournament. Because a tournament is too structured, right? It puts you in a sports film, right?
Yes.
It puts you into something like the Mighty Ducks, and that we're not here for that, you know? Like, it's far more interesting to just have the characters duke it out for other reasons. The video game franchise gets there too, you know. Like there's all kinds of scenes where they're running around the city like fighting bad guys and saving innocent civilians and stuff. I think it's very wise to sort of just abandon the sort of core, I don't know, the core center of what the game franchise used to be, and say, look, we just want to watch these people fight each other because they have cool powers, you know. In a way, it's like a budget Marvel movie or something.
Well, it reminded me a lot of the second Infinity War, because it's weird because I think this is where the movie actually slowed down quite a bit, but I still liked the part where they were planning it out. They were like, hey, we need to take the fight to them, so we're going to split them up and we're going to do it. But like, they had the voiceover as the fights were kind of happening, and so it all of a sudden turned into like a weird heist movie where each person split up to go do their job, and so they were able to do a tournament like sequence without having to, like you put it, without having to basically turn it into a bracket movie, you know. And I think if they get there to the actual, you know, 10th tournament or whatever, there's better payoff if you've had to wait for a couple movies, you know.
Yep. Yeah, for sure,
man. I did. What a wild movie. What a surprisingly fine movie.
Yeah, I was really surprised as well. And to be fair, I have very little sleep these days.
Right.
Okay. And I watched this in two parts. But yeah, I was delightfully
surprised. My defenses are lower than they've ever been.
I don't know what the Rotten Tomatoes score is right now. My guess is it's like hovering in the like six range. And I think that's pretty spot on. But I think
not
as far
a bad
as,
six.
I mean, honestly, as far as the video game movies go, this is one of the best ones. Yes. And it's very strange to say that. And yep. and I think it's because it's not reaching for the stars. It's not trying to be anything more than it is. Yep. I think if you have been a fan of really, like, you know what I would say? If you're a fan of schlocky horror, right? Mm-hmm. Or any kind of like schlocky action film, like even if you're just a fan of something like, I don't know, The Raid, right? Yeah. Where we throw out the sort of emotional drama and really focus on the action set pieces, I think yep. you're going to find a lot to like, because it's just action set piece after action set piece.
Yes.
Never quite as good as the first one, but I think they, for the most part, they hold up.
Yeah, agreed. I very pleasantly surprised by what they did. And it also just kind of gets in and out. Like if you subtract the like 8 to 10 minute credit sequence, the movie's like 1 hour 40 or something like that. You know, like it's not a like crazy 2.5 hour, you know, wild epic, you know, yeah, which I think yeah. serves it well and hopefully sets up a tone for the hopeful subsequent movies that they have in the pipe.
Yeah. I'm going to assume that this will do well enough to continue making the films. I don't really yeah. know. It's so hard to know on any movies these days, to be yeah. honest, because
yep.
streaming and COVID has just really fucked up like yep. how we understand viewership. But yep. We know that they delayed Mortal Kombat for a while to ostensibly make room for Godzilla.
And right.
As far as HBO goes, like this is a pretty big movie that they've been pushing on their platform. Yes. So
yeah.
I think it'll probably do well enough to you know, earn its keep.
Yeah. And then we can have a new Mortal Kombat, the movie, the game, the movie, the game.
do you think Cole Young will be added to the game? Almost certainly, right?
I don't. Yeah, you got to wonder. I mean, it's weird because he's such a weird, like, nothing character. And say what you will about whether you like them or not. Like, the characters in Mortal Kombat at least go places, whereas Cole's thing is basically like, I'm the descendant of Scorpion. I mean, it'll be interesting to see like how if at all they do this.
Yeah. I hope that in sequels, they don't bring him back like as a main character anymore. I think being the audience surrogate is all we needed him to be in this right. film. And right. we don't get really any of his internal drama because we don't want it. And I right. continue to not want it. right. So like in a way, like I know at the end of the film, he's like, I'm going to go to LA and here's a poster of Johnny Cage or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Assuming that he's going to go hunt for Johnny Cage. But
yep.
I don't know. In a weird way, I'd rather just have Johnny Cage be our next protagonist. You know, like I just have it be someone else.
I mean, yeah, they need to find someone that can do the kind of, you know, Ryan Reynolds-esque performance that Johnny Cage demands, you know, like the fucking douchebag Hollywood guy. And then I think that could easily carry a second movie.
Yeah, that could also be very bad. You know, you're not going to luck out with someone like Kano every time, you know,
that's true. That's true. But I mean, maybe that's where you bring in others, you know, you bring in kind of and let's be real, like they're going to bring Kano back. And when he comes back, half of his face is going to be metal and he's going to look like, you know, the Kano from MK1 because he's like, oi, they had to put me back after you did this, you know, like that sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, 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 for sure.
Well, there you have it. You know, two kind of sleep-addled, non-thinking thumbs up to an exceedingly dumb but entertaining movie.
Yeah, I hope people give it a watch. I think it's a fun time. Although, do be warned, very violent.
Very violent, yes. It's called Mortal Kombat, and it earns all of the... It earns its legacy.
Yes.
All right. Let's leave it there. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our website. We will be back next week. And if you missed any previous conversations on any episodes, you can find all of them wherever you find podcasts.
We got games to play. There's games coming out.
Ooh, we got games.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. As always, good to be back. And we will talk to you again next week.
Ciao.